This podcast is sponsored by Amy Taylor Inspires. The world knows her as Amy Michelle, the shame eliminator. Amy's life's purpose is to teach women how to remove their shoes of shame and stand in their shoes of power and promise. How many times have you felt ashamed because of things in your past? Felt like you couldn't move forward and be who God created you to be because shame had you bound? Trust me, I've been there. And I thank God for people like Amy Taylor, who uses her authenticity and transparency to show you how you too can remove your shoes of shame and step into your shoes of power and promise. Please check out Amy's website at www.amytaylorinspires.com. That's www.amytaylorinspires.com. Hey guys, welcome to Tales from a Butterfly podcast. I'm your host, Taria Shondell. Sometimes caterpillar, sometimes butterfly, but always striving to make it through life's many metamorphoses with my faith intact. With this podcast, I hope to encourage anyone that is going through life situations, no matter what they are, that have left you feeling like you will forever be a caterpillar in the cocooning stage, having to continually shed your skin while fighting to get free from any chains that are holding you back from your transformation. I want to tell you, keep your faith in the transformer, believing that just like the butterfly, when you come out, you will be a thing of beauty who is not afraid to fly. So come on, my butterflies, let's fly. You're listening to episode 44 of the Tales from a Butterfly podcast, titled When the Silence Ends, Life Can Begin. Angela D. Wharton talks living again after the pain, part two. Hey guys, thank you so much for coming back and tuning in to part two of the episode, When the Silence Ends, Life Can Begin. So without further ado, we're going to jump right back into where we left off last week.
Wow. So I made my mom keep her curtains drawn, keep the blinds drawn. I would stay in the middle of my mom's bed. I was afraid to get out of the bed to go into the bathroom because I felt like maybe he had like some kind of x-ray vision. I know it sounds really...
No, but I
yeah, wow. That he could see my movement and that he would like sniper me.
Because he did the thing that he wanted to do, so why wouldn't he be able to do... Right. That would be... Wow.
Right. Because I know he has guns. He has access to a gun. And that stuck with me for a long time. People would come and see me. I wouldn't walk people downstairs because they would come up to my mom's room.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't leave. They would come up to my mom's bedroom.
Oh, so you mean downstairs, like in the house? No.
Nope. I would stay in my mom's room.
And how did she handle that during this? And your brother, a man, like, yeah, how did they all?
My brother, yeah. My mom, she still worked every day.
Okay.
But she would send people to see me. So she would send people to talk to me and to keep me company, to bring me lunch and stuff like that. Like, she would make sure I was covered in that sense. But when she came home, she just gave me my space.
Okay. She knew you needed to.
Yeah.
Okay.
She just gave me my space. She spent a lot of time downstairs in the kitchen because her sisters would come over and keep her company.
Okay.
You know, they would come see me and then they would go sit with her.
Okay.
So they would come in and see both of us, like my aunts and everybody. But yeah, it was tough.
Man.
It was really tough. And it took me about 15 years. Now I can say that. It took me about 15 years to recover. Because that's how long it took me to start Phoenix Ministries. Because God had given me the vision for Phoenix during my recovery phase. Because I spent a lot of time reading scripture, like seeking God's face for answers, you know, just trying to find out, okay, this happened, God. Now, what do you want me to do with it? I'm still alive. That man could have blown my head off at any given moment.
And then you said you prayed for God to not wake you up for a week. So
I said, okay, God, what do you want me to do with this? And one night he gave me the entire vision for Phoenix. I wrote it all out, looked at it. It's like, oh no, God, this is way too big for little Nisi from Eager Street. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a pastor. Phoenix Ministries? I'm not a minister. You can have this, God. I'm not doing this. I told God no. Because you know, whenever God gives you a vision for anything, it's huge.
Yeah.
God does nothing small.
No.
Nothing. So for 15 years, I ran from the call of my life to start Phoenix. Man. Until one day, I was watching Steve Harvey on TBN.
Okay.
I was watching.
Steve is everywhere. He's on TBN.
This was back in, 2011. Okay. And it was Steve Harvey, and he was on TBN. He had the show where he would invite celebrities to come on and talk about different things.
Okay.
And this particular night was June 10th. I'll never forget it. June 10th, 2011.
Mm.
He had Tyrese on.
Wow.
And if you go to YouTube and pull up Steve Harvey on TBN June 10th, 2011, what? That show comes up on YouTube. And Tyrese was sharing about his book that he had just published. It was, Getting Out of Your Own Way and Doing What God Has Called You to Do. I think the title is just Getting Out of Your Own Way.
Okay.
And
that's funny. That's what's on my coasters in there. Get out of your own way.
Yeah. That's the message.
Yeah.
That was a breakthrough moment for me, because after listening to the two of them talk and listening to what Tyrese was talking about in terms of the book, I was convicted for the last time. I got the laying out on the floor, begging God for forgiveness for not starting Phoenix. I mean, just the snot and the crying,
everything.
All of that. It was just, it was awful. But I finally told God yes.
Mm.
I finally gave God my yes. I said, okay, God, I know I have to do this. I've been knowing this for years, so I'm ready now.
Mm.
And then I started looking for that note where I wrote
that
down
you wrote the entire vision down.
I never got rid of it. When I moved, whatever transition was going on in my life,
I kept it
because I knew I had to do it.
Right.
But I knew I wasn't ready. So I was tearing the house up that night looking for it, couldn't find it at all. And then I heard the still small voice of the Lord that said, write it again. You know what I told you, write it again.
I got things to do. Clearly, I read.
Okay. So I found
write it again.
I found this old journal from one of our old Empowerment Temple women's retreats or women's conferences we had. They gave us like these little books, and I wrote everything all out, just like it was 1996. Three pages. Everything God said. So that's how you know it's a God vision.
Because you were able to just like that. Yep. But, and also the fact that, and I never thought about this, sometimes we'll feel convicted and we'll say, okay, God, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you repented first.
I did.
And that just really stuck out to me. Like, Lord, I'm sorry, because it's not just you that you delayed. It could have came to you delaying other people.
Absolutely.
And their breakthrough, because if he gives you a gift, it's not for you anyway. So I Absolutely. Like the fact that you said you asked him for forgiveness, and then it was like, then you were able to move on.
Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time to kind of understand that it wasn't my time yet.
Okay.
It wasn't time for me to start it, 5 years before I did, or even 2 years before I did. It was time for me to do it when I did.
Okay.
Because how could I be able to heal somebody else when I'm still bleeding on the people?
Mm. You can't right. I heard somebody say that you can't open somebody up and then just leave them bleeding because you don't have the tools to now fix what you've opened up.
Yeah. You can't do that. So God had to get me to a place of healing where I could be equipped to help others as well. And I had to understand that, because I would beat myself up literally. Like, you know, God told you to do that.
Okay.
You didn't do that. Why are you wasting everybody's time? You wasting God's time. But it just was not time. And now when I have conversations with the members of Phoenix who have gone on to do great things, they published books, they've started nonprofits, they're doing so much in the community and helping so many other people, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, what if I wouldn't have started when I did? What about her? What about her? You know, what about their lives if I wouldn't have done anything?
Wow. And there's a freedom. I know one of your members, it's like, I knew her before you started the ministry and then after, and there is a difference. I can see there's a difference in the way they carry themselves, even in their conversation. And then you had done a presentation, and you had chains on you. And it was like, so like the visual was so,
yeah.
you know, and everybody, I said, I'm a survivor. Mm-hmm. And it's almost feel like if you were to go to Alcoholics Anonymous or this, like you said, those first steps are acknowledging, because you want to think, well, that's not me. I'm not. But you are. That is what you are.
Yes.
So the fact that you're free, I think that free enough to say it, almost like when you lie to your mom, and you're like, I want her to find out because
right.
I'm tired of carrying this.
Right.
I want her to find out what I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's almost the same. Did you feel that way? Like once you were able to say it, but now once you were able to say it, did you find that the more you talked about it, the more you wanted to talk about it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So going back to the first thing that you mentioned, acknowledging that you are a survivor or that this happened to you is one of the first steps to your healing process.
Okay.
Because it frees you. It takes that heaviness from your shoulders. Like, okay, I said it. I got it out. Yes. I hear that from so many survivors that I have conversations with. So that is one of the first steps in your healing process. And for me, the more I talk about it, it's therapeutic. Sharing my story is therapeutic. You know, for some people, it may be difficult because they haven't gotten to that place yet where they can share it over and over again.
Okay.
But then I have those who are in that place and they want to share it over and over again because they know that sharing their story can not only change lives, but it can actually save lives.
Mm.
And I'm a witness to that. Wow. I'm a witness to that where someone told me that they sat in a Phoenix meeting and was suicidal sitting there.
That just gave me chills.
And I didn't find out until after the meeting because we would have like these conversations, like a few ladies would kind of stay back.
Okay.
And she actually shared with me that she was suicidal sitting in the meeting. But after we had the meeting and by her sitting there and us praying and us going through the Bible study and going through the exercises and hearing the stories of all the other women in the room, she could identify with them. And she understood that, well, wait a minute. She went through that too? And look where she is.
Mm.
She went through that? And, well, if God did it for her, then God can do it for me. And that's what it's all about. That being that face of hope for so many survivors who feel hopeless. Mm. Because that's how you feel.
Wow.
Not even day to day. Sometimes minute to minute. You feel hopeless. And that's simply, there's always hope in God.
Wow.
Always hope in God.
I like how you, God gave you the vision to such where it's, You said you did that. You've read the Bible, you prayed with her, but then you did the exercises and you have therapists to come in. So it's like he gave you the total picture because sometimes we feel like, oh, I'll just talk to my homegirl or I'll just pray. But I feel like, I mean, I heard Dr. Matthew Stevenson said, some of y'all need to see somebody. That's why God gave people these gifts. So I like how you include all, you don't just leave them out there. And again, I've seen you with these women. So y'all, it's not like, they go to a meeting when the first Saturday of the month, right?
It was every other Wednesday.
Where did I get Saturday from?
I'm not sure.
Maybe you're going to start them too. Okay, go ahead.
It was every other Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Empowerment Temple. But we're getting ready to start next Friday, January the 5th.
Okay.
And we are going to do First Fridays with Phoenix at the Empowerment Temple from 6 to 8 p.m.
Okay, First Fridays.
Yep.
Okay, I like that. I don't even know why I said Saturday either, but again, maybe, you know, you'll be global.
I know.
Because I could see you being the planter. So you going to other churches, because it's just amazing how we don't talk about it in church, but you going to churches and training other leaders to be able to start it, because you can't be everywhere, but you can be global.
That's part of the vision that God gave me. That's why we had to start that's why we had to start it at the Empowerment Temple. He said, this ministry must be in churches, but I need you to start at home first. And that's when I reached out to pastor.
And the fact that he, wow.
And you know, our pastor is, when it comes to out of the box thinking, there is no box with Reverend Dr. Jamal Harrison Bryant. There is no box. He's radical. He's not afraid of anything. And he says, it's approved. Talk to Reverend Keisha. She'll get you started.
And even though there's no box, he's also still not one to just, some pastors, oh, go ahead and try. Go. So you know that it was God, like, you know, absolutely, definitely God ordained for, wow.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've been doing it there at the church for about 5 years now. Man. I know, it's been long.
It's been a long time.
It doesn't seem like it's been that long, right? No, it's been since 2012.
Wow. And
we started, and we're going into year six.
Man. And it's just, like I said, I see you. Oh, so, and in terms of the ministry. So you don't just leave people. You don't just go to a meeting every the Wednesday and then don't hear from you. I see you interact. I mean, you can't even walk through the hall without somebody stopping you. Angela, you practically have to run out of church.
You should see the kids. They're like, Mommy, we're hungry. Well, wait a minute. Just give me 1 minute. I got to talk to her. Just give me 1 minute. Okay. So, yeah.
Wow. Angela just messed me up, y'all, because... And Corey's probably going to look at me like, you going to do what? Because I had recorded something earlier that I was going to put out tonight. So it didn't look like I skipped a week. But since my fabulous producer slash hubby can cut things out, now I'm going to have to bump that back. And I've already gave it episode numbers. And I'm going to have to go and record because this needs to go out. and I don't feel God. Like I want to put like something out today and then yours out on Monday. I really feel in my spirit that this needs to have its own folk, even if it goes into two parts, because it's just, you know, as I'm sitting here, I'm like, well, Lord, you're going to have to tell him. Let him receive it, Jesus. Right. It's nice having an in-house producer. Mm-hmm. But God. I mean, because your story is, I'm sitting here and I feel like I could feel your emotions. And I'm just thinking about, again, this Me Too and how so many people are held captive and held back because they're afraid to share. And here you are just, you can clearly see, and for the listeners that can't see her, can hear, and for the people that do know her, but you may not just be able to see her right now, can hear that she is truly free. She's not just saying, I'm free. There's a lightness to you. When you, I like how you can talk about it. You went back to that moment, detail to detail. Yeah, yeah. And even if you felt the pain, you didn't stay there. So you're able to come back out of it. And I'll never forget, Reverend Eva had mentioned something in the marriage ministry, and she was saying how we had to do an exercise, and you were there. You and Darnell were there, actually. We had to talk about something. You remember that?
I remember that.
And she was like, but if you cannot go back and come out of it and not be angry or not be sad, don't share it. Exactly. And that made me think, like, I'm very conscious of that now. If something still affects me to that point, it's not time to open that wound.
Right. And there's still some healing that needs to be done. Yeah,
because you're just glowing. And I'll tell you, I mean, you're just glowing. And I just thank you for the ministry that you have. Because, you know, and I will tell people, like, you know, because I've told folks about Phoenix, like, you know, you got to, and it's just, again, it's just amazing that the church, more churches wouldn't have something like this.
Well, and this is just Angela D. Wharton's opinion.
Okay.
One of the reasons I find is that a lot of it is taking place within our churches. Mm.
Okay.
You have choir directors, you have youth pastors, you have lay people, you know, that are actually abusing our individuals in the church, whether it's man, woman, boy, or girl. It's happening in the church. So you have that along with some churches not knowing how to do it, not knowing how to handle it, not knowing what to say. So I think that those items are some reasons why it's not being discussed in other churches. The fact that it's happening there and that people don't know what to do. They don't know how to handle it. So,
Okay.
So I've created the blueprint to have a Phoenix ministry in your church with your women's ministry. Now we don't, now I get the question, well, what about the dudes? What about the men? Well, there could be a Phoenix Ministries men's version, but I need a leader, a male leader, a male survivor who's willing to step up and run it, because men are not going to open up to me.
Okay, right. And no, they may hold different emotions.
Relate, right?
They may hold different emotions.
Exactly. Okay. So if I had a male minister, pastor, or even just a survivor who's ready to speak up and take other men survivors by the hand and help them through this, then I would absolutely want to sit down and chat with them and see how we can make this work. But as it stands now, Phoenix Ministries is for women ages 18 and older who are survivors of sexual violence, whether it happened when you were a child or as an adult.
Okay.
And we provide a safe space where women survivors can break their silence and embrace their healing. And we do all of that through love, support, advocacy, education, and empowerment. Within our meetings, we talk about what the Word of God says about things that we go through in terms of the fear, unforgiveness, low self-esteem, suicide, depression. We talk about what the Word of God says about those things, but we also talk about how to deal with them.
Right,
you know, because, how to handle it, how to get through it. And that's why we have a therapist come in from time to time as well, so that we can get like the clinical reasons why we're going through this and how to get through it from that aspect. Also, a lot of the women who come have never shared their story. They've never broken their silence.
You read my mind, 'cause I was gonna ask you that. Mm.
They've never broken their silence. So this gives them a chance to do so in a safe space around other survivors who understand, that won't shame them, that won't blame them, that will embrace them. Mm. But then they can also make an appointment, an individual appointment with the therapist.
Accountability.
To start their healing process.
Okay.
So this is like everything that we offer at Phoenix Ministries for our survivors when they come.
That's amazing. And it's funny you said that, you know, it often happens in the church. And it's funny because I never even told my mom this, but I remember being 10 years old sitting on the front pew and people had went, it was a church that I grew up in, and people had went outside, and there was an older gentleman. And we all, you know, all the kids knew him, and sometimes he had candy, whatever. I'll never forget. I can't remember the comment he made, but he put his hand on my thigh and moved my dress up and just rubbed my thigh a little bit and then just moved his hand. And I was like, did he? And then my mind, I was like, no, he didn't. But I can still remember what that felt like. And I like never said anything because I'm just like, oh, that just, you know.
You see how you remember it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You see? Mm-hmm. And you were 10 years old, you remember that. That was sexual trauma.
Wow.
You know, that was non-consensual. That was sexual assault. The feeling that you got when he touched your thigh, you knew it wasn't right, right?
Yeah, it was like a...
You knew it wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads into something that I wanted to share in this moment. Predators have a way of grooming their individuals that they want to molest or rape. They have to build that trust in them. Oftentimes child molesters, child predators, they will have candy. They'll buy candy, gifts. They'll build that trust in your kid and your child to be able to trust them, to get closer to them, like,
so
you said,
because
you said he had candy, and that's how they bait children in. So for the parents that are listening, take notice of adults that are taking an interest in your children.
Okay.
If they want to take them to the store, buy them ice cream, or if they're coming to your house and bringing gifts.
Okay.
If they are asking your child to sit on their laps, we never do lap sitting.
Okay.
Ever. If they're asking your child to come sit on uncle's lap or on Mr. So-and-so's lap.
Okay.
That's a no-no.
Okay.
You know? And if your child comes to you and say, mommy, daddy, Mr. So-and-so, or even Mrs., because because women are predators as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so touched me here, or, you know, they made me feel uncomfortable. Or if, you know, mommy, your boyfriend did this, or daddy, your girlfriend did this to me. Believe your child and investigate, because kids may not be able to articulate every single aspect of what happened, every single detail. But if your kid comes to you and says that somebody touched them inappropriately, believe them and investigate it.
Okay.
The worst thing that you can do as a parent is dismiss your child when he comes to you. Or when she comes to you. Because as parents, we are our children's advocates.
Right.
And they look to us for protection.
Wow.
So if our child comes to us and we dismiss, oh, girl, he didn't do that. Okay. Or this is another thing I get. Oh, you be all right. You just get over it. That really tears at our souls. It literally destroys us. And you don't want to do that to your child.
Wow.
You don't want to do that to your child.
Even how you said the uncomfortable feeling, because you said a child can't articulate. And we say we need to trust our feelings. So if a child can't articulate, but they say so-and-so makes me feel uncomfortable. Yes, trust that also.
Trust that also. Okay. Or if they won't go to them and hug them. Or,
don't make them. We have a tendency to do that.
Yeah. Don't make them. Because then they feel like if a predator comes to them and they feel like they get that uneasy feeling, they'll do it anyway because, well, mommy made me do it when Miss So-and-so wanted me to give her a hug.
Wow. Okay.
So now I guess I have to do it now. And then that can lead into other things.
Right. Well, I never even thought about it. Thank you for that. I'm definitely going to take that tip in mind.
Absolutely. Wow.
You have really blessed me today, and I know you've probably blessed the listeners too. And the last question I'm going to ask, and this will probably be a two-parter, is did you have a hesitancy in telling your husband before you got married when you were dating? Were you afraid how he would react, and how did he react?
Ooh, yeah.
That was a lot, right? Yeah. I only have one more question.
Well, at least you prefaced it with, you know, this is a two-parter. So you kind of got me prepared. But yeah, I did I was hesitant in letting him know this because I wasn't sure how he was going to react.
Okay.
But I knew that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him.
Okay. And that was what I was going to ask you. What made you told others before him? And it, like, did you feel like that was something that you had to get it? You had to say it off the gate, just, or like, how did you gauge when you would tell someone that?
Well, it was different. I did tell others.
Okay.
Well, I told one other.
Okay.
And that's a whole different situation.
That's a whole nother show too, right? That's a
whole nother show. But with Darnell, God dropped in my spirit one day, like maybe 4 months after we were dating, okay, that he was going to be my husband. And I was at work when he did it. And I was just like, did you just say he was going to be my husband? Okay, Lord, if you say it. And apparently he was right.
He was right.
We've been married 12 years now.
Wow, with two beautiful babies.
Yes, praise God. But I remember just feeling in my spirit that I've got to tell him, like, I don't want to carry this into a marriage, you know, into a long-term relationship that would lead into marriage without him knowing. Like, I wanted to be completely honest with him. So I called him up and I said, can you come over? I got something I need to tell you. And he came over and I was like, okay, let's sit down and talk.
I wonder what he was thinking, like, what's going on? Like,
right? He was. And I just told him. I told him the whole story.
Did you tell him both, or did you, like, from when you were 14 and then again 10 years later? Like, how did you just gave it all to him, or?
I told him about the last one.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because I told you I suppressed
that.
That's
right. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, suppressed that other one.
Okay.
So I told him about the second one, the rape in the woods. And I expected him to leave.
Wow.
Because I thought that this was something that's too heavy.
Okay.
For him. Like, but I was like, okay, he probably gonna leave. Let me just go ahead and tell him though. He's probably just gonna leave. Right. That's what I was thinking. But he didn't. It was like an awkward silence.
Okay.
You know, after
he probably was trying to get it out from what I know of him. He had to download every
right.
step.
Yeah. Before every he could detail. Get, yeah, right. Yeah. And then he says, oh, okay. Like it was nothing. And I was like, oh, okay.
Like, right.
Oh, okay. He was like, yeah, he's like, I love you. I'm marrying you. And if that means that you come with this, then I'm okay with it. I'm marrying you. We're going to be together for the rest of our lives. I understand this is a package deal. So if this is a part of you, then it's a part of me. And 12 years later.
Man, and he really supports you in this ministry. I remember, wasn't your first, don't want to say launch, but at the Family Life Center.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember. And he was so, yes, like, you know,
yep,
he was very supportive of you. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and even still, it's not. And that helped takes away shame. I know, I feel like for me as a woman, sometimes, like, even saying someone touch my thigh at 10, it makes me feel like people will be like, you know what I mean? So I can. So it's good that you have that support, you know, in your husband. Like, so that's beautiful because he's definitely your biggest fan.
He is. And I just thank and praise God for him, because there's a lot of women who have dreams and have goals, but they don't have the support of their spouses. Mm-hmm. So they don't do it.
You know?
And sometimes you have spouses that are jealous of their husbands or wives' mm-hmm. dreams because they don't have anything going on. Mm-hmm. So they crush them.
You're right.
You know, or they kill them. They kill the dream for them. And because they don't have that support, they never do it. Then they end up living with regret.
Yes. And not fully fulfilled. And then you have the Corys and the Darnells.
Resentment.
Because I know Corey was like, if you don't find what you want to do. But, right. I mean, I know that's probably what he'd be saying inside. He didn't come out that way. But he'd be like, I'll never forget. I was going up the steps. And he was sitting on the couch. He was getting ready to go to the gym. He said, I just want you to do whatever it is you want to do. And I was like, and that moment kind of woke me up like, I'm going to need to go ahead and get it together.
Right.
Because he could say, I'm going to need you to go get another job.
Yeah.
And he didn't say that. Mm-hmm. He said, I just want you to find. So I appreciate that. I'm sure you're the same thing with Darnell. Like, girl, because I told you, I make sure he eat. What you need? Because I don't want you to ever tell me I have to go
back to work, right?
You know, work outside the home, even though it hasn't, like I said, always hasn't been easy. But knowing that he supports me, I feel like if I wanted to try to jump off a ledge, he'd be like, did you get your parachutes or something? Let me go make sure. And he'd be looking at the parachute to make sure it works. So I'm glad that I have him for support.
Yeah, it's truly a blessing to have a husband that supports everything that you want to do. He even wears a t-shirt.
Yes, he does. And yes, he wears a t-shirt. And I think, especially with your ministry, it can be so delicate but heavy at the same time. For a man to see another man supporting his wife, because I feel like maybe there's men out there who want to support their wives, but they sort of kind of don't know how to handle it. They know they can't help them or deal with their emotions. So maybe that would encourage other men to be able to say, hey, Brother Darnell, how did you handle this with your wife?
Yeah. Because I know for a fact that there are some survivors that I've had conversations with that did have this, that did tell their spouse or their significant other that they were raped and they left.
Wow.
They couldn't handle it. Because as survivors, we're still healing. And some of us suffer from control issues. That's one thing that he tells me that I had.
And you want to be in control.
When we first got together, he said I was extremely controlling. And that's because I lost control at one point. Like I had no control of that particular situation. So it's like I always need to know where the door is. Where can I exit? Who's in the room? Who's going to be around? Like, I have to know everything. I don't like surprises. I'm better with them now.
Okay.
But at first, I did not like surprises because I don't like, because basically this person ambushed me.
He surprised you. And then I feel like when it comes to like, especially something of a sexual nature, it's like somebody took something from you.
He did.
Like you took a piece of me that I can't get back.
Never give. Yeah.
Even if I heal, I'm still healed with, you know.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. And that's how we live day to day. I share with people that being raped and sexually assaulted, like when it first happened, you feel like the heaviness of it. You feel like, you ever watched the Flintstones?
Yes.
And you know, like Fred Flintstone worked in the boulder pit, the rock pit.
Yep, the rock, yeah.
and he was like, he had those huge boulders.
Yep.
So it's like carrying one of those huge boulders around. You just carry it, it's weighing you down everywhere you go. And then as time moves on and you go through your healing process, that boulder becomes a rock. You know, it becomes smaller and smaller and smaller until it becomes a pebble that can fit right in the palm of your hand.
Okay.
And you put that pebble like in your pocket, your back pocket.
So it never goes away.
It never goes away.
Okay.
It never goes away. You feel it from time to time.
Okay.
But instead, it's no longer controlling you. You control it.
Okay. Okay.
Where at first, it was controlling your life.
Man, you know? So everything you did, decisions you made, just dictated from that. Wow.
Exactly.
Wow.
But as you start to heal, you start to take your control back. Because one thing, a huge myth surrounding sexual assault in rape and sexual violence is that it's about sex.
And it's not about
sex. It's not. It's about power and control.
Okay.
Because you can get sex anywhere.
That's true. Okay. You're right about that.
You can get it anywhere. But it's about the predator having control over the victim. I hate the word victim, but the survivor. Okay. You know, controlling them, making them do what they want them to do. That's what it's about. And when you get healed, you take back your power. You take your life back.
Okay.
And you get back on track. And it's not an easy process. Like I said, it took me about 15 years. Mm-hmm. And everybody's healing process is different. It's different for everybody. It might not take someone else 15 years.
Okay. Or it could take someone 30 years, right. Like by speaking out.
Right. It could take somebody 30 years.
Wow.
But healing is possible. I want the listeners to understand that healing is possible. Hmm. But you, like Ayala Van Zandt says, you got to do the work.
Yes. That is her line. You got to, beloved.
Yes. You got to do the work.
And yeah. The work is hard.
The work is hard, but it's worth it.
Okay.
And I remember you mentioned a few conversations back about therapists. Mm-hmm. How, and I tell people all the time, God created the therapist.
Yes.
They're like a tag team. And I know for a fact that the fact that I have prayer, I have God, Jesus, and therapy is what got me to the place of healing that I'm at now. Because therapists are trained. They're professionally trained to dig into those deep, dark spaces where all that pain and all that depression, where it lives.
Okay.
And help you dig out of those places.
Well, case in point, you've repressed and had a trained person not known. Well, they didn't know, but it still came out just because it's
in the conversation at the meeting. Mm. They're trained to do that. So it's okay for Black folk.
Yes.
You know, our Caucasian counterparts, they go.
Right. And we're like, I heard on Blackish, the mom said, Black people don't go to therapy. We just pray and take baths. Ma'am. And even though I know it was supposed to be a joke, but it was obviously written in there because that's how we think.
Exactly. But yeah, but God created the therapist and the counselors. So why not take advantage of it? It's okay. It's okay. I'll never forget when we first had one of our first TO Sundays at the church. Because every April, pastor lets us have a Sunday where we bring awareness to sexual assault. Right. And our first time we were doing it, I was in the lobby handing out flyers, letting ladies know that Phoenix is here and we can assist. And an older lady walked up to me. She had a book in her hand, a spiral notebook. She said, "Why are you telling everybody your story? Everybody don't need to know your story. I wrote my story right here in this book. And it don't need to go nowhere. The Lord know my story and this book know my story. You ain't got to tell everybody your story." And I said, "Well, God told me to tell people my story so they can change their lives." "Well, I didn't do that." I said, "Okay, it's okay that you didn't do that, but I have to be obedient to what God has told me to do." And she just grabbed her book and she tugged at her book and walked away.
It's crazy how you're reading my mind, because my hand to God, if God was sitting here, I was going to ask you, did you hand anybody a flyer that got angry? Because to me, that even again, just talking to you and me having those little flashbacks, it invokes a feeling. How dare you prick a sore that hasn't healed?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. See, it's in her book. She wrote everything.
Everything in her book. And for her to say, "I wrote mine." So she wanted, it's like she wanted to get it out, but I'm going to take it back. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
She did. And she was angry.
At you for
me. Why are you telling everybody your story?
Your story, not.
It's my story. I can tell who I want to tell. God told me to.
And she said, God knows my story, my book. No. Wow. It as you're talking, I just look and see like a somebody who, let's say, fell on a nail and they punctured their skin, and then they let it get infected. So then you have to go to the doctor, and without pain meds, almost they have to dig out that infection. Ooh. But once it's dug out, when they put the new bandage on it, it heals.
Yeah,
and that's it, as this whole time that we've been talking, that's what I feel like. It's a digging, and sometimes you might not have that anesthesia. But once it comes out,
it's out.
It's out, and it can properly heal. It
can properly heal.
Because if not, it'll need to be amputated. Huh. And we don't want that.
Huh.
Wow.
Come on here.
Wow. Mm. Exactly. You have blessed me tonight, boy, I'm telling you. And you've given me pointers to look out for, and maybe even on the back of your mind, you know, as adults, to just, I talk to my kids about it, but to talk to them more about it and make sure they know they're free to come to us. Please. And because people are creating trust that can sometimes surpass mommy and daddy. Mm-hmm. So make, so absolutely, have these conversations.
Yeah. And know the parents. Know the parents. Where, you know, the parents of your kids' friends, you know, because if they're going to their houses and they're hanging out and things like that, know the parents and know what's going on
in
the house. Because I know of times where, you know, mommy and daddy will be hanging out at the house, you know, parties or what have you, and all the kids are away doing other things, and there's a big brother or a big sister in the house,
mm-hmm,
that will touch the little kids. Or try to make kids do inappropriate things to them, you know? So just be aware of those things.
And things you would never think. And I know, mm-hmm, like, I keep saying, okay, I'm gonna wrap it up. But you saying that, it's like, you're literally like in my brain, because mm-hmm, a couple episodes back, I interviewed Randy Roberts, Randy Free Roberts. Uh-huh. And there was a family party at his house. He said it, and he went to bed and he woke up and his uncle is standing over him, mm-hmm, and he said God allowed him to wake up. But this is a family party.
Yes.
And we think go on upstairs and play, mm-hmm, go on in the basement and not checking on our kids, just being too trusting even with family members.
Yeah, because most statistics, more statistics show that 87% 87% of survivors were molested, raped, assaulted by family members.
87%.
Family members and friends. People that they know are doing this. So don't think it's a stranger. Don't think that it's always a stranger. It's people that are close to our kids.
Mm.
And we have to keep our eyes and our ears open. We have to.
Pray and watch.
Yeah,
and
that's right. Because it's happening when you least expect it. It's happening.
Wow.
And we have to educate our children as well. And like you said, to make sure that they feel comfortable enough to come to us and let us know if something like this has happened and not be afraid. I didn't tell my mom because I was afraid.
Okay.
Remember, he turned everything around on me.
And it was your fault because you let him in. And mm-hmm, you let, okay. Mm-hmm. And they'll sometimes use wording that your parents will use, not necessarily that way, but that does sound like something. Even though your parent wouldn't mean it that way, but like they know.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good. Okay. Well, so you just,
man. Keep our eyes and ears open.
All right. So the last thing I will ask you is, can you give, and I don't want to say, like, make it sound trite and say advice or, mm-hmm, but if someone is listening now who hasn't told anyone, but has buried this pain deep and it's manifested in other ways, or it hasn't manifested itself yet, but they feel like it's going to at some point, can you give them something that maybe they can do or call? I mean, can you, and I definitely want you to give out your information. Again, because guys, not only is Angela a survivor, she knows of trained therapists and doctors, and you heard her say that one helped her. So what is something that they could do?
Well, the first thing that I would say to any survivor who's listening is I want you to understand that what happened to you, of course, is not your fault. You did not deserve to be violated in any way, nor did you ask to be violated in any way. But aside from that, I want you to understand that help is available. You know, sometimes we feel like there's nobody out there. Nobody's going to understand what I'm going through. Nobody knows what you're feeling. I know. I've been there. And I also know that help and healing is available, and you just have to reach out and ask for it. Reach out and take advantage of the resources that are there. There's resources in terms of phoenixministries.org. There's national resources, the Rape and Incest National Network, which is RAIN.
That's what that stands for, okay.
That I mentioned earlier. That's RAINN.org.
Okay.
And it's all over the internet.
Okay.
But sometimes we may not even feel like we want to do that just yet.
Okay.
So if you're in that place and you're not actually ready to reach out to the internet or to other folks, please grab a journal, grab a piece of paper, go to the note-taking section in your smartphone and just write out what happened to you. Write out what you're feeling, because you have to get it out of your system. That's one of the first ways, again, to start your healing process. Okay. Because the more you hold on to it, the more you suppress it, the worse it makes you feel.
Wow. Okay.
And I know you're listening, and I know you understand exactly what I'm saying. So that's why you have to get it out.
Okay.
You can call me. The number to reach me is 443-317-3070. Again, that's 443-317-3070. That's the number to Phoenix Ministries. We can assist as well. But if you're able to just grab some paper or something, okay, somewhere, write it out. Whatever you're feeling,
just get it all out.
Get it off of you. But of course, you got to pray.
Okay.
You know, we pray.
Yes. Yeah.
We talk to the Lord.
Okay.
But even before you do your journaling, before you write it out, pray first, because it can be difficult, because okay, it's gonna bring back to your remembrance what you've gone through.
Okay.
You all, they heard you go back to when you was 10 years old, you know,
right.
It's going to come back, but pray first and just ask God to give you a peace, give you peace surrounding, writing out what you've gone through.
Okay.
And write it out. And you don't have to give it to anybody. You don't have to let anybody see it. After you write it out, you can delete it if you want to, because the point or the purpose is for you to get it out. So I would tell survivors to do that.
Okay.
But please, please get it out. If you can, if there's someone that you trust that you can go to and have the conversation with, you can do that as well.
Okay.
But if you feel like there's nobody that you trust enough with your story to tell, then write it out.
Write it out. So at least it's out.
The last thing you want is to tell somebody and then your business end up in the street.
Because
We know that there are some people that you can't trust with your story.
That you can't trust with your, yes.
You cannot. So if you are that, if there's no one that you can trust with your story, then just go ahead and just write it out. Just get it off of you.
Okay.
So that you can free yourself.
And I promise my producer, I don't want him to give me the side eye. Last thing. I meant to also include, you've spoken to the survivors. Can you speak to people close to the survivors? What can, if somebody wants to say to us, it's almost like you feel like if someone were to come to me, I feel like it's my duty to have a scripture or my duty to say something back. Like, so give us a piece of advice on how we handle that, whether it's our child, spouse, whomever.
If a survivor comes to you and shares that they have been assaulted, believe them. That's the first thing,
okay,
I want you to do is believe them.
Okay.
Because oftentimes we feel like nobody's going to believe us.
Okay.
And we need support.
Okay.
Surrounding this. So believe them, number one, and do not give advice to them.
Okay.
If after they share, do not say, well, girl, you need to go to the police.
Okay.
Come on. We're going out to the police station right now. We going right now. You know, or don't say to them, well, let's go to the hospital to get the safe exam. No, you need to go now. Let's go. No.
Okay.
Let the survivor decide what he or she wants to do next.
Okay.
They may just want you to hold their hand.
Okay.
And sit in silence.
And that could be their process. Everybody's,
yes,
is not the same, like you said.
Everybody's is not the same. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, is that sexual assault and rape is about power and control.
Okay.
Our power and our control has been taken from them. If you tell them what to do,
you're doing it again.
Yes, exactly. You're re-victimizing them. You're putting them back into that place, which could be a trigger for them, and they shut completely down. And then you have nothing.
You've lost. Okay.
You sent them right back to where they were.
Okay.
So you want to let them decide what they want to do next. And it's okay if they don't want to go to the police right now.
Okay.
It's okay if they don't want to. I mean, we want them to.
Okay.
Because we want them to file a report so that we can get this person so they can stop hurting others.
Okay.
That's how we stop predators.
Okay.
But if they don't want to do that, it's okay. So just listen and let them decide.
Wow. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I'll definitely make sure. I know I'll hear your soft voice in my head going, listen. and let them decide.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Angela, for doing this and being, again, being so open and sharing your story, because just like the woman who came to the meeting and said she was suicidal, there's probably more that you don't even know that just may sit back or may hear the announcement at the church and may observe you and you don't even know. They may not have been to one meeting, but they can see Christ in you. So I appreciate you for being willing to share your story. So can you give all of Phoenix's information?
Yes.
And then say again, Life After the Silence, From Pain to Power to Purpose. Even though I'm going to say that you can get it on Amazon, you can say again that they can get it on Amazon along with the journal. Okay. And your information where someone can reach you. And
absolutely. So I can be reached at Phoenix. I'm sorry.
Can you spell Phoenix too, just in case?
Yes. Okay. I can be reached at AngelaDWharton.com. And also I'm on all social media under Angela D. Wharton, actually on Twitter and Instagram under at Angela Empowers. You can find me there.
Yes. Yep.
Angela Empowers. You can find me there. Phoenix Ministries. I'll spell that for you because it's a unique spelling for a unique ministry.
Oh, I like that.
So it's P like Paul, H Y, N like Nancy, Y X like X-ray Ministries. And we're on all social media under Phoenix Ministries. And I think on Instagram is Phoenix_Ministries.
Yeah, because I get your stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And the website is phoenixministries.org. The telephone number again is 443-317-3070.
Okay. And if people want to contact you to speak at their events, how would they reach you?
They would go to angeladwharton.com/booking. And you can submit a request there. And my assistant will reach out to you and we'll go from there.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And again, the Phoenix Ministry meetings will be the first Friday of every month from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Empowerment Temple AME Church, which is 4217 Primrose Avenue, Baltimore, Maryland, 21215. And our very fine pastor is none other than the Reverend Dr. Jamal Harrison Bryant.
Thank you. And yes. And again, you guys are getting a leader that is not just giving you when the meetings are. She herself is in attendance. Makes it her business every meeting and shares, and she works tirelessly. And again, remember, you don't just have someone ministry in the church or running meetings out of her house, which is all well and good. Again, as I mentioned in her intro, she's working hand in hand with the state's attorney's office to encourage legislators in Annapolis to bring our predatory sexual assault laws in line with the federal statute. So she's working all aspects for our survivors. So clearly she's someone you can trust, and me knowing her just personally, you can pull her up about anything. Cause sometimes I say stuff to her that she probably be like, no, you know, you done went too far, but she'll go, okay. All right, girl. And these are personal conversations. So I know that she definitely will hold anything. Cause she's one of those, I could just fly off at the mouth and then be like, okay, I feel better. I'm good. So, thank you. Oh, and the book. Yes. Mention the book again.
Yes. And the book can be found on Amazon.com. And also it's on AngelaDWharton.com. And the title of the book is Life After the Silence, From Pain to Power to Purpose. And I also have the journal, which is the Life After Journal. And those are both found on Amazon and on the website as well.
Make sure you guys get the journal, because as she did say, if you can't speak to anybody, at least write it out. So guys, I just want to thank you again so much for hanging with me on this episode with Angela D. Wharton. When the silence ends, life can begin. Angela Wharton talks living again after the pain. Notice we're saying when the silence ends. So you can use your voice to be healed from whatever it is that you are going through. Now, I want to mention that her podcast, The Angela D. Wharton Show, is available again on iTunes and SoundCloud. I need you to go there, subscribe, rate it, and leave her a comment. This will bring more awareness to her podcast. It'll boost her rating on iTunes, possibly get her on the front page. And ultimately, it's going to help more survivors to speak out. You know, everybody wants to hashtag Me Too, but life is not just about a hashtag. We got to put some action behind this hashtag. So I appreciate Angela for that. After you leave the Angela D. Wharton Show, I'm going to need you to slide on over to Tales from a Butterfly and subscribe. You can go to Blueberry, which is BLUBRRY, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Podbean, and any other place that podcasts are hosted. And again, just type in Tales from a Butterfly. Also, head on over to TariaShondell.com to follow my blog by the same name, Tales from a Butterfly. FYI, I'm going to post something over there real soon, y'all, I promise. Okay. And also, if you don't have iTunes, as I mentioned earlier, you can listen to the podcast on Blueberry.com. I normally post that link on my Facebook page. When the Tales from a Butterfly directory pops up, click on the episode you want to listen to, and you'll be given options to subscribe. Because if I hear one more time y'all say, I don't even know how to even subscribe, click on the link, people. It's right there for you. And I will be oh so grateful. So again, listen in, subscribe, and please, I'm asking you to share the episodes on your social media with your friends, family, coworkers. I mean, even share it with your enemies. It just may convert them, and y'all can end up being the best of friends. And speaking of social media, you can follow me on Twitter at TS Faison, on Instagram, TS Faison, and on Facebook at Tales from a Butterfly. And guys, no matter what you have gone through in your past, no matter what situations that you were placed in by someone else, no matter what has tried to silence you and keep your voice hostage to your past, know that you can get your voice back and you can use it to be set free and live again. And remember, you will come out of it okay, because your current caterpillar will one day become your future butterfly. Fly on, butterflies. Love you guys. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, thank you.
Y'all, she gonna be the mayor. I think she might got you beat, Darnell.
Uh-oh. You got it.